Hi, Sandy Fowler here. On today's podcast, you're going to hear Judy and myself chatting with Ruth Sukup about fear and the research she did and the findings that she shares in her new book, Do It Scared. At the time of the recording, the book was not out, and we had planned on airing it after the launch, but we talked to Ruth, and she is offering some pre-launch bonuses. So if you pre-order the book, you can get some wonderful additional items. To find out more about that, go to doitscared.com/book. Enjoy today's podcast.
Welcome to Mighty Parenting, the podcast with real, raw, and relevant talk about raising teens and parenting young adults. Here are your hosts, Judy Davis and Sandy Fowler.
Welcome to Mighty Parenting, a community where we help you raise teens and parent 20-somethings so they can become happy, successful, and emotionally healthy adults. I am Judy Davis, and I'm here with my co-host, Sandy Fowler, and we are excited that you're here with us today. I want to thank you for supporting us and the podcast in our community. If you don't know what I'm talking about, you can head on over to mightyparenting.com/support and see how you can help us keep doing what we're doing to help you raise your family. And today we are talking about a topic that is something I struggle with, and that is fear. It really is, or has been, I should say, a controlling factor in my life, and it impacts so many areas. It impacts my business, both fear of success and fear of failure. It's kind of oxymoron. I go both ways. In my parenting, it's fear of saying or doing the wrong thing or putting too much pressure or not enough pressure. It's that constant tug of war that goes on within me, worrying that I'm not going to do it correctly or perfectly. And shoot, you know, fear impacts so many areas of my life. And obviously, as a parent, that's something I want to make sure that I don't pass along to my kids. I don't want my kids to have those same challenges and struggles that I have had. And I for sure don't want them to have fear ruling their life. You get what I'm saying, Sandy?
Oh, absolutely. I totally agree there, Judy, because, you know, you're very conscious about what fear is doing in your life. But I also think fear can be really sneaky and impact us in ways that we don't even recognize. And like you said, we don't want our kids to be limited by that. And one of the things we preach here at Mighty Parenting is that if you don't want it to happen to your kids, you need to fix it in yourself, because we need to model this for them. And that's our refrain, right? Mighty Parenting refrain, model it. We want to live the way we want our kids to live. And today, thank goodness, we have help with this. Joining us is New York Times bestselling author Ruth Sukup, who is dedicated to helping women overcome fear and create a life they love. Her practical advice is fabulous. It has been featured in numerous publications and news programs, including places like Women's Day, Redbook, Family Circle, and Fox News. She is a busy lady herself. She is the creator of Living Well, Spending Less blog and the founder of the Living Well Planner and Elite Blog Academy, as well as being the author of 5 best-selling books. She launched the popular podcast Do It Scared in April of last year, so April of 2018, and her new book, Do It Scared, Finding the Courage to Face Your Fears, Overcome Obstacles, and Create a Life You Love, is releasing this month. It is releasing on May 21st. And Ruth is joining us today to give us some insights and help us understand what fear is doing to us and to our lives and how we can kick it in the butt and do what we really want to do. So Ruth, thank you so much for joining us at the Mighty Parenting community today.
Thank you so much for having me. It's great to be here.
So Ruth, we got to ask, why fear? Why spend all this time and energy to write a book about fear?
That's a great question. And it does seem a little negative, doesn't it? And I honestly don't feel that way. But over the past number of years, I have been, you know, so connected with the women in my community and the people in my community and helping to teach goal setting and productivity and business and teaching people how to be more productive at home and in their work life. And the thing that kept coming back to me over and over, and the thing that I kept hearing from all these members of my community, was that they felt stuck and they felt like something was holding them back. And when I started to dig deeper into that, just that general consensus and this feeling that I was getting from my community, was that a lot of the time it was fear that was holding them back. So people were not wanting to set big goals and create big plans for themselves because they felt afraid and because that fear was holding them back. And it got me so curious. I had so many people telling me they felt like, you know, they had spent so much time taking care of everyone else. And maybe your listeners can relate to this, or you can relate to this. You're a parent, you pour into your kids, you're so concerned about being the best parent that you can be for so many years. You want to be the best spouse that you can be. You focus on your family as your kids are younger, and then they start growing up, and all of a sudden you have this sort of moment of realization where you go, oh, wait, who am I in all of this? And what am I doing in all of this? And my kids don't seem to need me as much as they used to, but I don't know what I'm supposed to be doing. And so I had a lot of people who were coming to me and saying things like that and communicating things like that. And I realized how big of a role fear was playing in so many women's lives. And that just got me so curious about it. And so I decided to dig deeper and do a survey, and I ended up doing this big study with my audience. We surveyed over 4,000 people and had to hire a whole team of researchers and psychologists to help me dive into all the data because it was pretty extensive. And what we came up with, the findings that we came up with, were pretty astounding and pretty incredible, and also I think kind of a game changer for a lot of women.
So what were some of those findings?
Well, the biggest thing that we discovered was that not all fear is created equal. And by that, I mean, and when I talk about fear, I probably should qualify this. When I'm talking about fear, I'm not talking about phobias. I'm not talking about being scared of heights or scared of spiders or things like that. What I'm talking, the type of fear that I was really curious about and wanted to dig into, was like this internal fear, this fear that holds us back from going after big goals and dreams, the fear that keeps us from stepping outside of our comfort zone and making change in our lives. And that was the type of fear that I was really curious about.
When you say internal fear, I just need a little clarification. What does that look like in a person?
Well, that's the interesting thing, is that it actually looks very different for different people. And that's what we discovered, is that fear manifests itself in very unique and distinct ways for different people. In fact, what we identified was 7 unique fear archetypes, which is basically the way that fear shows up in your life. And we found that it's more of a continuum than, you know, one person is one thing and another person is another thing. Everybody has a little bit of all 7 archetypes in them, but there's usually 1 or 2 that are very prevalent or much stronger than the other ones. And those are sort of the things that are most affecting you and most holding you back. So for instance, one of the fear archetypes is the procrastinator, which is also known as the perfectionist. And the procrastinator's biggest fear is the fear of making a mistake. And so the procrastinator will put things off or overplan everything or be hesitant to commit to something, because what the underlying fear is that they're afraid of making a mistake and they're afraid of committing to it because they don't want to make a mistake. Does that make sense?
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
it does. And when I was reading your book, it was interesting to me as I went through the archetypes that they are actually different than what I would think of. So for example, you know, the procrastinator, I tend to think of procrastinating as just putting things off, but you talked about how no, and actually the procrastinator can be someone who tries to give themselves lots of time so that they make sure they have lots of time to plan and organize, and yet they still work right up to the very last minute and keep making changes and things. So it was just interesting to me to read through those archetypes and see how they actually play out in real life, not our preconceived notions of them.
Yes. And I think that surprises a lot of people, especially with the procrastinator, which is actually the most common of all of the archetypes. I believe it's 40% of the population fits into that procrastinator archetype. So it's very, very common, it makes sense that it would play out in sort of different ways for people, but it's sort of two sides of the same coin. Some people put things off, whereas other people overplan everything. But in both instances, the underlying fear is the fear of making a mistake and the fear of commitment.
So the archetypes can help us see how fear specifically plays out in our life. But you were saying that, you know, fear keeps us from making changes in our lives. And that strikes me because there are, especially as, you know, parents of teens and 20 somethings, there are a lot of things that are going to be changing in our lives, whether we want them to or not. And so in those cases where something is pushed on you, external circumstances are kind of pushed on you. And if we're letting fear rule us, does that mean that then we just kind of tend to freeze and not do anything and just get pushed along with whatever happens?
Well, for procrastinators, that's often something that happens, is just becoming paralyzed with indecision, not wanting to make a decision, not wanting to do something or to move forward because they're afraid of what that might look like, or they're afraid of making a mistake. For other people, it might look a little bit different and the motivation is different. It might play out in different ways. Mm-hmm. So for instance, I'm an outcast, and as an outcast, my deepest fear is rejection. And that plays out in a very different way than for a procrastinator. In fact, from the outside, a lot of people would look at me and go, oh, well, she must be fearless, because an outcast is a very typical archetype for the entrepreneur types. It's that sort of rugged individualist mentality. But really, what the outcast does is rejects everyone before they can be rejected. And so what I've had to learn is how that plays out in my life, that I'm often afraid to ask for help, and I'm afraid to trust people, and I always feel like I don't fit in. And so then I react to that by sort of shutting everybody out before they can shut me out. And so I think the important thing about the archetypes is not that you can't overcome however they are playing out in your life, but it's really understanding what happens and knowing how they affect you so that you can create solutions, so that you can start to recognize those patterns in your life and then start to create the change and start to go after those bigger goals and dreams wholeheartedly without feeling like there's something standing in your way.
Mm-hmm. So when we don't understand this and we don't know anything about fear and we just kind of keep on keeping on.
Yeah.
How is this going to over affect our overall well-being? Because if we don't know anything about it, we're not dealing with the fear, then yes, fear is ruling our life. So what happens to us?
Well, I think that's really when people start to feel stuck and feel like they can't overcome those things because they're not really sure how it's playing out. A lot of this stuff happens subconsciously, so we don't even realize how fear is affecting our life. We might not label it as fear in our life. We might just feel stuck. We might just feel, you know, for the people pleaser, they might spend their life always worried about how they're being judged or how they're being perceived, and might be stuck in a trap of, you know, having to drive a really nice car, be in a really nice house, and not realize that there's fear that's underlying a lot of those decisions that they're making just sort of naturally because that's their natural disposition. Or for instance, the self-doubter, a lot of times the self-doubter, their fear manifests itself in hyper-criticism of others. And so they become very judgmental and they tend to really criticize, and that can really affect your relationships. And you might not even know that that is how fear is playing out in your life. So it's really the first step there, because what happens then is when people are feeling stuck, and I see this so much in the members of my community, in parents of teenagers and 20-somethings, where all of a sudden your kids are become more independent, they don't need you as much, and you start to question, everything that you've always been doing your whole, for the last, you know, 15, 20 years and wondering, okay, now what? Now what do I do? Who am I? And you feel like you've sort of lost yourself in parenting and then don't know what the next step is to take. And then that's where the fear is holding you back that you don't even know.
Well, and I love the fact that your book can help us first identify where and how fear is kind of controlling and ruling our life. But then it also helps us to move forward. And I love you have this section, Principles of Courage. And just kind of want to dig in a little bit there, because to me, courage and fear are like at opposite ends of the spectrum. And one of the things you talk about in that Principles of Courage section is the rules are for suckers. And it's, yes. You know, I'd love for you to kind of talk about how courage and this concept of rules are for suckers is so important in getting past the fear and getting through the fear.
This was one of Judy's and my favorite sections.
Yeah. The rules are for suckers.
Yeah.
I love that section too. That's actually been one of my favorite mantras for years is rules are for suckers. And it's, which sort of started as a joke, between me and my husband, where, you know, we were reading some news story and somebody was getting away with something. And I said, oh, honey, don't you know rules are for suckers? And it was one of those things that just kind of stuck. And every time we would hear something like that happening, we would say it again. But over the years, we really started to think about it and realize that in a lot of ways, it's true. It's not that all rules are bad. And this is what I talk about in the chapter. It's not about that all rules are bad, but when you start to blindly assume that just because something is a rule or something is the way somebody else says it's supposed to be, and you stop thinking for yourself, that's where the danger comes in. And one of the fear archetypes in the book, in the second most common after the procrastinator, is the rule follower. And so this is a real fear. And the rule follower, the deepest fear of the rule follower, is an unhealthy fear of authority, which means that a rule follower is often unwilling to question authority, even if that authority should be questioned. And so if you're talking about like adopting principles of courage, rules are for suckers is one that needs to be adopted, because it's just a little reminder, sort of tongue-in-cheek reminder, to start thinking for yourself and to always question the rules, always question what people are doing. Say, is this a good rule or is this a bad rule? And people do think I'm a little bit crazy for teaching this to my kids, telling them, oh, girls, rules are for suckers. And my kids aren't teenagers yet. I'm very close to having a teenager, but I'm not quite there yet. And a lot of times people will say, well, aren't you worried that when they become teenagers, they are just going to throw that in your face? And honestly, I'm not, because what I am trying to teach my kids is that not all rules are good, not all rules are bad, but you need to be able to use your critical thinking skills and use your judgment in order to decide for yourself whether or not a rule is worth following or not.
Well, and I loved that example. And that's one of the reasons Judy and I think gravitated to this, is it was that parenting aspect of it. Is, to me, this is something we should be teaching our kids, even if it's our rule. For my girls to come to me and say, Mom, you have this rule and this makes no sense to me. To be able to have a discussion about it and come out the other end and go, okay, yeah, you're right. That rule doesn't make sense. We'll do it your way. Or maybe there's an in-between. Maybe, you know, I don't think their way makes sense either, and we compromise. Or maybe we come out the other end and I go, I heard you and I still believe this is the right way. And then they have a choice to make. They can choose to follow that rule or not. And it's not my job to make them follow the rule. It's then my job to just go, okay, you didn't follow the rule. And now you live with the fallout of that. You live right with the consequences of that, whatever those may be. And that's a cycle of reality.
Yes.
It's something they need to learn.
Honestly, critical thinking skills is something that does not get taught very often these days. It certainly doesn't get taught in school. And I know this just as an employer and having had employees that are, you know, just coming out of school. And that is something that is just, it's not a natural part of our society anymore. And I think that as far as a parenting goes, that the best thing that you can do, you can teach your kids, is for them to be able to make those critical thinking decisions. They're not going to make, there is going to be a time where you don't get to lead them, where they have to think for themselves. And if they're not prepared for that when they're younger, then man, you're going to be in a world of hurt.
I think, you know, on the flip side of that, I think that this mantra of rules are for suckers is so important for us as parents, because so often we defer to teachers or medical professionals or therapists about the rules they have and how our kids should be dealing with certain things. And we let our gut instinct and, you know, the common sense part of it go by the wayside. And if yes, we challenge those rules, when our kids need extra help in school, maybe, you know, I think of this a lot with the 504 plans or different kids that need extra help in school or kids that are needing cognitive development things. And I just go, challenge the rules, because it is, we know our kids best.
Oh, absolutely.
That's the message we have here. So
I have the perfect example for that. That happened to me when my daughter was in kindergarten. She was going to public school for kindergarten. And we had this just feeling like something wasn't right, you know, where she wasn't, the teacher just didn't seem to really have much of a grasp on like what she needed. They were learning letters and my daughter was already reading chapter books. And so there was kind of a disconnect from where she was at academically and just socially. And she was very well behaved. So she was getting ignored. And we had concerns, but every time we brought them up, the principal and the teacher would say, well, we're the educators. We know what we're doing. We see this all the time from parents who think that their kid is special. And, you know, as a first-time parent, you have that moment of going, oh, well, I don't want to be that parent who's like thinks my kid is more special than anyone else. And so we didn't say enough. And what we finally realized at the end of the year, and when it was too late to really fix it, and we did pull her out of that school, but that she was just not getting what she needed from that teacher. The teacher had no clue. And it was one of those really like hard, but really good lessons to go, oh my goodness, I am never going to put myself in a situation where I don't trust my gut and where I just take that, we're the educators. You need to play by our rules. Explanation again, that is not going to work for me. And this was before I had adopted rules are for suckers as a mantra. So had I had that, maybe that wouldn't have happened, but it certainly is a reminder to me. And I think a reminder to all parents that exactly what you're saying, to question authority. It doesn't mean you have to be belligerent. It doesn't mean you have to be a jerk about it, but it is okay to question anything anybody says, to have that when that little kind of voice in the back of your head says, I wonder if that's actually right. To like, don't just take things at face value ever. Question it, look it up, do a Google search if somebody gives you a fact about something, anything, and see whether or not it's true.
Mm-hmm. That's such a powerful thing. I think that's why Sandy and I loved this whole rules are for suckers. We'll be, you know, sharing it with our people all along.
Well, and that was the piece where you talked through in that section. You said common sense. We want to make sure that we are engaging our common sense, and that this is why we're learning how to identify and get past our fears, because it's our fears that make us follow rules that we maybe even not just don't agree with in the sense of, well, I think that's silly, because it's one thing to think something silly and do it. But even to the extent of going against our beliefs is that, you know, we'll get into a group and there'll be an authority and we will do things that are against our belief systems because we're afraid, and we're afraid to step out, and depending on our archetype as to exactly what's causing that fear. But bottom line is it's fear. As you said, we don't want to be that parent. We don't want to make things more difficult for our child because we're difficult.
Right. Right. It's very hard to step out and to speak up, which is why it's so important to adopt that as a mantra and to repeat it to yourself, to realize like these are little things. And that's why the principles of courage are so important, because they're the little things that you need to remember in the back of your mind all the time, because those little life lessons will come up over and over and over again. There's, you know, a million times a day we're presented with things that play on our fears and that either will keep us stuck or that we can overcome.
Mm-hmm. And when we're dealing with the fears, oftentimes conflict comes up. And you talk about conflict in a really interesting way. And I would love for you kind of to dig in, because you say conflict is a good thing. And I can see our parents going, okay, I'm going to adopt this rules for suckers mantra, and I'm going to challenge some things and do some stuff. And all of a sudden they're going to have more conflict in their life. And you're saying that's a good thing. Can you talk about that?
Yes, I am a firm believer that conflict is a good thing. And I call it constructive conflict. And by conflict, I don't mean just, you know, again, not being belligerent, and I still believe in being respectful of other people, of speaking with respect, of treating people with respect, but being willing to speak up and also being willing to receive feedback is one of the most important skills you can ever learn and hone. I think so many people are afraid to give feedback. So many people are afraid to receive feedback, and the combination of those two mean we have a lot of people walking around who don't dare say anything and or get angry when other people say something to you. And neither approach is healthy. And because in real life, it's having those constructive conflict moments are what make you better and stronger and more sympathetic. It allows you to see different points of view. It challenges your paradigms. It helps you to step up. There's so many good things that come out of fighting for the best idea and for getting that feedback from having people tell you, you know what, I don't think that was a great move. You should maybe do it a different way. Or have you ever tried this? It's amazing how many better results can come out of that conflict, which we don't always think about. We tend to shy away from it instead.
And as a society, I think that we look at any type of conflict, anytime someone has a differing of opinion, that it's an attack on our person, that it is an attack on who we are. And I feel like that's gotten way worse.
It's absolutely gotten worse. And I don't know if it's social media or just maybe the lack of critical thinking skills that happens in schools and the lack of teaching how to have constructive conflict. But I mean, we can see it in society. We all know that there's so much polarization. People on both sides of the aisle are just so angry with each other that nobody is willing to just have a conversation. When the reality is that there's so much middle ground, and there's so many ways that we as humans could be better listeners and better receivers of feedback and work to find better solutions if we were willing to listen to the other side.
Well, you talk about that too, you know, that we look at feedback as judgment.
Yes.
But you also show very clearly how important it is to embrace honest feedback. So can you maybe give us some tips for doing that? Because if we feel that we're being attacked, that's scary, or it's hurtful, or there's some emotion going on there. So how can we get past that? And maybe that's just fear too, that's stopping us from accepting the feedback. How can we get past that to hear the feedback and actually get the benefit from it?
Well, I think it's really important if you're looking for a feedback, or, you know, maybe looking for an accountability partner or friendships where you have more like a higher level of trust, that you start with the trust, that you start with an understanding of love and acceptance and caring that will transcend the things that are sometimes hard to hear. And that doesn't always happen. So you can't just go into any relationship and think, well, I'm just going to give this person, I'm going to just lay it out there exactly how I feel, because that doesn't work, right? And it doesn't work when people do that to us. If they haven't built up any sort of trust or goodwill, it's really hard to accept what they're saying. But when you can seek out those relationships with people who are especially growth-minded individuals, have you ever heard of Carol Dweck's book Mindset? She talks about people with a fixed mindset or a growth mindset. And there's a really big difference. Growth mindset individuals feel like there's always a way to improve, whereas fixed mindset individuals feel like who they are is who they are, and they're not open to feedback. They're not open to that kind of thing. So those are probably not the type of people that you want to get into some sort of accountability group with, because it's not going to work. But if you can find those people in your life and seek out those type of people in your life that are growth-minded people and who are interested in that feedback and who are willing to be vulnerable with you and accept your vulnerability in return, I think then that's where the magic happens, when you're able to have those relationships where you can be super brutally honest with people, but also know that they have your back and that you have their back 100%. I have a small group. I talk about this group in the book. I call them my truth club. It's four of us, and I was actually just with them last weekend. And they're just such a great group of women, and we're very different. We have different, you know, belief structures. We have different, all sorts of different things about us. But what we have in common is a willingness to be vulnerable with each other, to care about each other as people and not just as people who have the same, like all the same things. There's a deeper understanding there. And I think that comes from being vulnerable, but what we are willing to do is call each other out. And we know each other's fear archetypes, and we see them happening, and we will call each other out on our fear archetypes. We'll call each other out on other things, but we will also, there's no one, I know that I can go to those three for anything. I can ask them for anything, and they would drop everything and be there for me in a heartbeat. And I think when you can start to create some people in your life that you have that sort of relationship with, that's amazing, because they will sharpen you and build you up and make you better.
And I think that is almost a lesson that I can take as a parent, because when we're talking about these kind of relationships, if I can teach myself how to be and being willing to be vulnerable with my teenager or my college student, understand how to care about them and their feelings and seek that deeper understanding of who they are as an individual, not as who they are as my kid, the fear will go away and I'll be able to engage with them in this constructive conflict instead of butting heads and creating this family friction. What you're saying is so valuable and can be applied to the parent child relationship in so many ways. You know, create that trust group with your kids.
Oh, absolutely.
I had actually the same thought, Judy, of just how that could play out in your family when you make sure that you're building and growing that trust as our kids go through, you know, I mean, from when they're little, but, you know, especially through, you get through the tween years, the teen years, and those young adult years, and you just keep growing that trust. And Judy, you've talked many times about your relationship with your, you know, older 20 somethings. Mm-hmm. And I think that's part of it, is that you have to be building that foundation, and then you can do the feedback and things. Mm-hmm. But Ruth, so this, well, obviously we're very excited about this. We also know that this, doing this work and facing the fear of facing our fears is in and of itself kind of scary. And in the third section of your book, you have your courage in action items. And mm-hmm. one of them was find your why. And I have to be totally transparent here. Judy and I both at first wanted to roll our eyes, because being in the entrepreneurial community, we've heard so many times, you know, find your why. And it's so oftentimes so esoteric and so, I can't even come up with the word, but it's not helpful you have changed that when you covered this in your book.
And I was a little nervous about where this was going. This was, I think, my do it scared moment on this podcast.
No, so that we wanted to dig into it a little bit because it is something that we hear, you know, find your why. And we also see the value in having a why that is important, that is big, that helps us have the courage and the oomph to do the work that it takes to do these things. So we'd love to understand more about why the why is so important.
Right. Well, I'm a little nervous now that we're talking. I don't want to say anything that's too cliche.
It can be cliche because, yes, some of it is cliche, but you also, in the book, you back it up with substance. So that's why we're talking about it. Yes, we need the cliche. We need to get the mindset piece of it. But then we also want to talk a little bit about how to do that. Because I just don't see people talk about that like you did. But before we can talk about the how to do it, we got to go, okay, why is it actually important to have this why? Why does this why actually matter? Wow, let's use the word why one more time.
I know, it starts to feel like it's a little bit redundant. But the reality is that in order to overcome fear, there has to be something deeper driving your reason for wanting to overcome it. Basically, your why has to be stronger than your fear. And it doesn't mean that your why has to be some big esoteric thing. It can be something very, very specific. I think I use that example in the book. When I first started my business, my why was related to my husband. He hated his job. He was an aerospace engineer. He had been an aerospace engineer for 30 years. And he made great money as an aerospace engineer, but he was absolutely miserable. And so every day he would go to work and every day he would be completely miserable. And one of the reasons I started my blog called Living While Spending Less was because we were fighting a lot about money. But the reason that we were fighting so much about money and my shopping was because he equated, every time I went to the store, he equated that with more time he had to spend at work. And there was so much there. And so for me, I was so driven to start a business because I didn't want him to be miserable anymore. And that why was big enough for me to overcome all of my fear of trying to figure out a business that I had no idea what I was doing. It was big enough to overcome like just any of those resistances that would stand in my way. And I think that I talk about that in this chapter, that sometimes there are big catalysts that help us get over our fear. Sometimes it's having some tragic event and all of a sudden we realize life is too short to deal with this anymore. I was just talking to a friend whose mom just retired and was immediately, like, 1 week before she was going to retire, was diagnosed with breast cancer. Some sort of cancer. And now she's fighting it and she just retired. And my friend said, why? My mom has spent her whole life planning for her retirement and now she's finally there and she can't do it. And why am I saving all my money for something that might never happen? And that was sort of like, that's been a catalyst in her life of changing the way that she's thinking. So for some people, it's a big catalyst like that. For other people who have a lot of willpower, sometimes it's just a matter of saying, nope, this is the change I want to make and I'm going to go for it. And then for most people, there's something somewhere in between. And there's this sort of spectrum of catalysts that can change the way that you look at fear and how you can overcome fear. But if you don't have some tragic event to rely on and you don't have the willpower to just change your mind and do something different, you can actually manufacture catalysts in your life. You can create a why in your life. And sometimes that might be finding an accountability partner. Sometimes that might be listening to super inspirational podcasts to start building that up in yourself. So there are things that you can do. It doesn't have to be that you automatically have this giant why and that's what drives you.
Mm-hmm. So I love the fact that you're saying that if you don't have it, you can create it. Because I think that's the part that felt so airy to me, you know, having been successful in network marketing, we trained our people to find their why. And it always felt false to me. But what you are giving us is that it is really and truly a why is a catalyst that helps you when things get hard. And life gets hard.
Yes.
And, you know, it doesn't have to be anything big. It can be a little thing that will just give you enough to get to the next little thing, which yes. that feels so good to me. It really
feels
does.
A lot more doable.
For sure.
Yeah.
For sure.
Well, in your quote in the book, you said, quote, "If the why feels too hard right now, create an environment around you that will set you up for success." And I'm like, we can all do that, whatever that success is, you know, whether it's, okay, I'm just going to figure out what I'm going to do next week, or it's, I'm going to start a business, or it whatever, I'm going to travel the world, whatever your version of success is at the moment. We can just start doing things to create an environment that we're in without having to find this big, huge internal, you know, drive and dream and huge desire.
Mm-hmm. Oh, that's so true. And I think sometimes that we look at people who are successful and in whatever area of life, whether it's business or in some other area aspect of our life, somebody that we admire, we look at them and we think, man, they must have it all figured out. They must have always had it all figured out. They've known exactly what they're doing. They're always organized. They've got it all. Like from the outside looking towards somebody else, it always looks very different than it looks from the inside and where you're just struggling to figure it out for so long. And nobody sees that part, especially once you have reached a level of success. People only see the end result. They right. never see the struggle that led you to where you're at. Mm-hmm. But courage is like a muscle. So if you want to build up your courage, you have to just take little steps, little steps, little steps. And I talk about this in the book a lot of, it's all about action. It's not having to take some massive action. Sometimes it's the smallest action. It's the smallest step in the right direction. And then the next step. And then the next step after that. And that's why when you can surround yourself with positivity and encouraging messages and find people, you know, find a community of people that inspire you, you can put those support systems in place. I mean, the age of the internet is amazing. There are podcasts like this one. There are online communities. There's so many things that you can do to start creating that encouragement in your life that's going to keep you sustained until you can start to like realize what your bigger why is.
Mm-hmm. And that's such an important message to all the parents listening today. You don't have to have all the answers about the issues going on or the challenges you're facing. It is just about do what's next and then build on that. And slowly but surely, and that whole thing with from understanding our archetypes to getting to through the courage and action, it all builds upon itself and has so many applications into building the relationships with our kids and with ourselves. So I'm like loving all that you're saying, and it's so powerful.
Powerful. Ruth, you know, Judy and I have had small exposure to what you're doing. You've been exposed to the data, you know, going through the research and all of that. Has learning what you've learned here, have you seen it affect your parenting?
Oh, definitely. I mean, my kids can rattle off my quotes faster than I can say them to them. It's, I mean, on a daily basis, it's the only thing you can control is yourself. And we have that conversation, and I actually share a couple of examples of that conversation with my kids in the book. But you know, that's one thing that I have a 9-year-old and a 12-year-old, and they make each other crazy on a daily basis. And we constantly have to have that conversation that, hey, you can't control what your sibling does. You cannot control what your sister says to you or how she acts. But if you let this ruin your whole day, that's going to be on you. That's on you. And you have to you have to make those good decisions for yourself. And it's so funny because now they'll throw it right back at me when I get mad at my husband or I get mad at them. Well, mommy, if you're going to let this ruin your whole day, that's on you. The only thing you can control is you. So they're listening, even if they're not always following through.
Oh, I love that. And I love this conversation. And there's so much here. We're just going to go back and pick out a few of the key points. And I usually end up picking more than a few. But when we started off, I loved, Ruth, you said, you know, talking about fear can feel like a negative topic, but it's actually a positive one because uncovering it can get us unstuck. And that happens because when we don't see fear for what it is, we can feel stuck. We can feel in a trap. And depending on our archetype, that trap can feel differently. But we can definitely get stuck there. And speaking of archetypes, you've discovered that not all fear is created equal, that it manifests itself in different and unique ways. And there were 7 key ways, which are the archetypes that you cover in your book. Then you also cover, after the archetypes, you go through the principles of courage. And we love rules are for suckers because it's basically just saying, hey, think for yourself. Use some common sense and think for yourself, which is something that we want to do and we want to teach our kids to do. When we do that, we're likely to run into conflict, but that's a good thing when it's constructive conflict. And that means we need to be willing to speak up and be willing to receive feedback. And it's important for us to look for relationships in our lives or create relationships in our lives with a high level of trust so that we have a place that we can go where we're willing to be vulnerable so we can get honest feedback that we can actually benefit from. And doing all of this is not easy work. And sometimes in and of itself, it can be scary. So it's good to look for your why. And your why just has to be stronger than your fear. It's a catalyst that helps you when life gets hard. And so get our courage out there. Courage is like a muscle. Start building it up by just taking one small step and then another and another, just taking small steps in the right direction. And Ruth, this is amazing. As we said, your book is being released here May 21st. Where can people go to learn more from you, either before or after getting the book?
Yeah, you can find everything you need at doitscared.com. That's the easiest one to remember. We've got there, you can take the assessment to learn your fear archetype. We've also got a great community for people who are looking for accountability called Doing It Scared. So you'll find everything. And of course, the book, you'll find that all at doitscared.com.
And your podcast.
And my podcast.
That's fantastic. Well, thank you all for joining us today and being part of the Mighty Parenting community. I know we have given you some nuggets to take and implement in your family. And if it's your first time listening, welcome. We are excited that you're here. And we want to invite you all to go to mightyparenting.com to see what we have to support you along the journey of raising your teens and 20-somethings. And remember, you are a mighty parent, and Sandy and I will see you next week.